Welcome to the Baptist 21 podcast. Baptist 21 exists to honor the gospel faithfulness of our Southern Baptist heritage, to engage current cultures with the gospel, and to cooperate for future kingdom effectiveness among Southern Baptists in the 21st century and beyond, so that all peoples will bow to King Jesus. You can visit us on the web at baptist21.com.
Proverbs 1 tonight. Last week we looked at King Solomon and his asking the Lord for wisdom and God giving that to him, and how that led to his kingdom being glorious, and also him being the wisest king on record in Israel's history. And the Bible told us in 1 Kings how many thousands of Proverbs he had written, and so forth. And tonight we're going to look at the Proverbs that he has written that are recorded in Scripture for us to study in the book of Proverbs. And we're just going to, over the next year, walk verse by verse through the book of Proverbs and seek to understand what's happening. I know that for many people, maybe many of you like me, this is, if not your favorite, one of your most favorite books in the Bible. Billy Graham reads a chapter of Proverbs a day, along with five Psalms. And a lot of people do that because there's 31 chapters. And so you can work through the book of Proverbs in a month. It's a very good practice to read a chapter from Proverbs a day in order to be wise. That is what the book of Proverbs is about. It's about wisdom. And, you know, above maybe any of the other books of the Old Testament and New Testament, the book of Proverbs gives basically just practical advice on how to live life. That's one of the key components to the book of Proverbs, is that he's instructing in wisdom. Now, I think what we're going to do in this series is we're going to correct a little bit of a misunderstanding about what Proverbs is. Proverbs, most people, again, I think love the Proverbs because they feel like I can read in Leviticus and I can read in Romans, and there are things that I just can't understand. There are things that I can't grasp that are just kind of too lofty for me. But when I get to Proverbs, I mean, here's the practical stuff that everybody can understand. And so we relate to that. Like, we think that Proverbs is kind of, as one preacher I heard said, that it's kind of like the Israelite version of Dear Abby. Okay? You just, they're getting these just little tidbits of advice, you know, kind of somebody calling in to Delilah after dark and getting, you know, her little wisdom on what to do in relationships or whatever. That's kind of the idea of what we think the book of Proverbs is, and yet it's not. That's not exactly what Proverbs is. As we looked at last week, wisdom is not just intellectual ability, and foolishness is not just being silly or immature. And maybe I can help us understand it this way as we get ready to dig into Proverbs. A couple of months ago, I decided to get on eBay and sell some old cell phones that I had that I wasn't using anymore, but they were in good condition. So I sold this cell phone to a guy. I can't even remember his name or where he was. And he emails me like 2 days later, and he's lost the cell phone that he bought for me. And what's happened is he writes back to me. I should have saved this email just because it's so funny / sad. He gets this new phone, and then he goes to the casino. Okay, I don't know who this guy is, but he buys this new phone. He goes to the casino, and he loses the phone that he's had for 2 days. And so he's like, "I really, really enjoyed the phone. Thanks for selling it to me. I hope I can find one just like it. But you know, I'm an idiot, and I lost it at the casino." And most people would think of foolishness as somebody buying a phone and losing it 2 days later. Okay, like, I don't know if you've seen these commercials that, I can't remember if it's AT&T or Sprint or something, that it gives these statistics about how many of our hundreds of millions of people on this network making phone calls, checking emails, and then it says 100 of those just left their cell phone in the cab that they got out of. Okay, Most people think of foolishness as that, as like leaving your phone somewhere. Whereas I think the Bible would describe his going to the casino as more foolishness than his losing the phone. Okay, because what we're going to see is foolishness has a moral component to it that we're going to see here in the book of Proverbs. So let's just start Proverbs 1:1. We're going to work through verse 7 tonight. Verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. Okay, now, right away, the book connects the book connects itself with, hey, thank you so much. You're so kind. Oh, ice and everything. That's great. You get to hear me slurp, too. The book connects itself with the monarchy, okay? It connects itself with the kingship. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, who is the son of David, the king of Israel. Now, the reason that that's important is twofold. One, the phrase, the title, son of David, is extremely important. We looked at last week, 2 Samuel 7, God promises to David, you're going to have a son who sits on the throne, his kingdom is going to last forever. He's going to defeat all of his enemies, and there's just going to be, he's going to bring in peace, and I'm going to fulfill all the promises that I've made through this son of yours. And so, in a real sense, Solomon partially fulfills the promises that God is making to David. Now, he doesn't fully fulfill the promise. Why? Because he ends up dead in a coffin. Okay? So he's not fully the promised son to come, but he partially fits the bill. If you were to read the book of Kings, you would see that there are sons of David that come along that partially fit the bill, but ultimately fail. And that's true with Solomon as well. And so it's important that he's the son of David. He's the wise king who sits on the throne, who has the kingdom is more powerful and more glorious during the time of Solomon than it ever is again after him. In fact, it says here he's the king of Israel. He is the last king of Israel, as it is defined here. Okay, he is the last king of Israel united, of all of Israel. Because after Solomon dies, his son, Rehoboam, is going to make some unwise decisions, which again, as we continue to look throughout, Solomon is instructing in this book, he's instructing his son, the crown prince, and how to be wise so that he can rule the kingdom. His son, Rehoboam, is going to be a fool and make very unwise decisions. In fact, what happens to him in 1 Kings, he has a decision that he has to make, and the elders of Israel come to him and give him some advice, and then it says he decides not to listen to his elders, and he listens to his peers, and as a result, there's a guy named Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who rises up in a civil war, and the kingdom of Israel is split. And only two tribes in the southern kingdom, which is called Judah, and then 10 tribes in the northern kingdom, which is called Israel. So Solomon has the most glorious kingdom of any of the Israelite kings, and he's the last king over a united Israel. Okay, after this, Israel is going to be divided, and you won't have a united Israel until Jesus sits on the throne of David, okay? And so, that's important, that these are the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. That also tells us that, regardless of what liberal scholars will say, that Solomon is the main author of the book of Proverbs, okay? Most people, most scholars these days, and the only reason I'm telling you this is because this is what I'm studying in school, and so I don't want that knowledge to go to waste. And most scholars think that it wasn't written when it said it was written, or written by whom it says that it's written by. And I just think they don't provide any good arguments to the contrary. And when I say he's the primary author, as we move throughout, The book admits that Solomon is not the only author. Okay, so we'll just look at this really quickly. Okay, so keep your finger there and then turn over to 10:1. Proverbs 10:1. Okay, you have another heading there, right? What does it say? The Proverbs of Solomon. Okay? So there are different collections to the book of Proverbs. Okay? So he would say these Proverbs, and then they would collect them and put them together in this arrangement and then stick them together with other Proverbs. Turn over to 22, in my Bible it sets it off, but 22, around 22:17, there's another break. If you have a heading that says sayings of the wise, you have sayings of the wise, okay? This is another collection. Then look over in 24:23. And what does it say there, 24:23? These things also belong to the wise, okay? And so there are apparently collections of Proverbs that are not specifically spoken or written by Solomon that he takes and adapts and brings into his book, okay? So he's taking these further sayings of the wise and bringing in his book. Now look down at 25:1, if you're there in 24:23, look down at 25:1. What does that say? Do what? Okay. The Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. Who wrote them? Solomon. And who collected them? Hezekiah's men. Okay, and so he's still the author, but there were some other people who were doing the arrangement. And then you look over, and here's how we know. This is one of the only books of the Bible, like Psalms, that specifically says that it has more than one author. Okay? Look at chapter 30. Somebody tell me what 30 verse 1 says. The words of Agur, the son of Jacob, his utterance. Okay? So this is written by a guy named Agur, however you say it. And then look over in chapter 31. Words of King Lemuel. The utterance which his mother taught him. So apparently this queen mother, who, from what everybody thinks, is not an Israelite. This either 30 or 31, they think were written by Gentiles. And so you have Solomon, who is the main author of the Proverbs, and then you have like two chapters that say they're written by somebody else. And so we take the Bible at face value. And whoever it says wrote them, we believe wrote them. So Solomon is the author. If you go back to 1:1. Solomon's the author of Proverbs, which makes perfect sense because he's the wisest king in Israel's history, which is amazing. I'll just give you this. I'll just give you a little bit of seminary class. Not that this is what they teach, but the books that I've read on this. It amazes me, like, when scholars come to the book of Proverbs, they say there's no way Solomon could have written it. And they say that there's just this legend, this untrue legend about this wise King Solomon, and so that's why the book is attributed to him. But then they'll look at 25:1 and say, now when it talks about Hezekiah's men collecting them, we know that's true because it says there would be no reason to say that if it wasn't true. I mean, okay, so why could that not? I mean, if they think that Solomon, they said that, but it's untrue, why would you say that in 25:1? Why would they say this if it isn't true? I mean, they just don't make convincing or very coherent arguments. Okay, and so the Proverbs of Solomon, that we have great confidence that he has written these, and he's the king. And so verse 2, now he gives us the purpose of the book. Okay, and it's exactly what we think it would be, to know wisdom. Okay, to know wisdom. Now he's going to give word after word after word here in these next two couple of verses that are basically what I would say are synonyms with wisdom. Now, you know, a synonym, a word that means something similar. Now, I wouldn't say that they are equivalent terms and that they mean exactly the same thing, but they all, like if you were to talk about wisdom language, if you were like draw a circle and say, okay, here's the terms that help us understand what wisdom is, he gives us all the terms that would be inside that circle. Okay, and so he says, to know wisdom, which, let's just look at this real quick because we have time. Go back to Exodus, second book of the Bible. Let me see if I can't find it. Exodus chapter 31. Exodus chapter 31. Okay, somebody tell me what the if you have a New King James, what is the caption there at the top of 31? Lord spoke to Moses. Okay. I mean, I'm sorry, not the verse, but does anybody have a section heading there? Skilled workers, okay, or some may say the tabernacle, building of the tabernacle, something like that. Okay, now look what it says. Verse 1, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, see, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. Okay, which is interesting, the tribe of Judah. Who is in the tribe of Judah? Jesus. Who else? If Jesus is David and Solomon. Okay, yeah. That's right. Judah is the tribe. Okay, verse 3. I have filled him, this Bezalel character, with the Spirit of God in wisdom, in understanding, in knowledge, and in all workmanship. Why? Why does he fill him with wisdom? Verse 4. To design artistic works, to work in gold and silver and bronze, and cutting jewels for setting, in carving wood, and to work in all manner of workmanship. Okay, now I turn back over to Proverbs. So, in the Bible, wisdom in some places is presented as skill in a trade. Okay? Skill in a trade. I mean, that's something that's very practical. Like, God gives him the Spirit in wisdom so that he can build the tabernacle. So that he can carve wood. I mean, is what the text says. Okay? And so, in a lot of ways, wisdom is presented in the Bible as skill at building things, skill at a trade, at labor, which should come as no surprise to us because you have this guy, Bezalel, who's of the tribe of Judah, who builds the tabernacle. What does the tabernacle point to in the Old Testament? It does point to Jesus, absolutely. But before Jesus, the tabernacle is a temporary tent. What it comes between the tabernacle and Jesus. What other construction project comes between the tabernacle and Jesus? The temple. The temple. Okay? Who builds the temple? Solomon. From the tribe of Judah. Who's anointed with the Spirit of what? Wisdom. Okay? And so, wisdom, one, those who have wisdom build things in the Old Testament. And we're going to see in Proverbs chapter 9, woman wisdom builds her house, it says. And not only do they build things, but but later on in Exodus and Deuteronomy, wisdom is given to those who would lead. Okay, it's given to Moses, Joshua, Solomon, in order to lead the people of God. Okay, and so wisdom is a very practical. The reason I'm just doing that is because wisdom can be a very practical thing. Working a job, okay, working a trade, making decisions, okay, leading a people. And so when he says here that the purpose of Proverbs is to know wisdom, it doesn't just mean kind of like, it's not just talking about study, and it's not just talking about just kind of intellectual activity. It's talking about skill, okay? Skill at, I would say, wisdom is skill at living life. Skill at living life. That means skill in the workforce, and he's going to talk a lot about that in Proverbs. That means skill in decision making. That means skill in the words that you use. It means skill in viewing the world appropriately and rightly. Okay, we don't have, I'm not going to go any further down that road, but it's wisdom is skill. Okay, at living life, being able to walk through life appropriately. And he says, verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction. Okay, that it's also a word that is used for discipline. Okay, discipline, like when I discipline Maddie, my purpose when I spank Maddie or whatever is not to hurt her because she's done something wrong. Okay, I mean, like for me, retribution is never the reason why we correct or discipline her. Why do we discipline her? We discipline her because we're trying to teach her the right way to live. We're trying to teach her, you know, there's a couple of things that I will spank for. There's a couple of things that I will discipline her for. I don't discipline the same way for every offense. But there are certain things, if she is trying to run out into the road, okay, I will spank her. Because if she's doing an activity that could potentially be life-threatening, like sticking her finger towards the socket, I will spank her. Because I want her to, but I don't just spank her. I get down in her, at her face and I say, honey, if you do that, you're going to hurt yourself. Okay? And so why am I doing that? It's not because I enjoy, spanking her, because I don't, at all. And if I had a boy, it would probably be a lot easier. It would be. Because there's just something within dads to see your daughter cry is just horrible. But I will instruct her in that way if she is outright defiant when we give her an instruction. Then we will discipline her. Why? Well, it's not just because life is easier when your children obey you, although it is, okay? It's easier when your kids listen to you and do what you tell them to do. That's not why. The reason why we take discipline so seriously in terms of outright defiance or rebellion, you know, saying no, you know, or something like that, is because we recognize the Bible says that the way that she responds to us is the way ultimately that she will respond to God. And that if she is affirmed, or if she's just ignored and allowed to go into a pattern of constantly rebelling against authority, then it's not going to lead to her conversion. It is going to lead her away from God. And so instruction or discipline is exactly what it says there. It's not just like we punish to hurt. It is you discipline to instruct, to get somebody off of the wrong course of life back onto the right course. And that's exactly what he's going to say throughout. He's going to use this word and talk about the rod being on the back of fools. And what he's going to say is there's a path that seems right to a man. He's walking down a path. It seems like it's going the right place. And it says in the end it leads to destruction. In the end it leads to death. And so discipline and instruction is to call the person off of the path that leads to death and get them on the path that leads to life. Okay, that's what instruction and discipline is meant to do. Discipline is for correction. It is for instruction. It is for learning. Secondly, there in verse 2, he says, to perceive the words of understanding. Okay, so now this is talking about a teaching moment, okay, that there are words that are being passed from one person to another, and that person is receiving and understanding these things, okay? And so there's teaching that is involved. And we're going to see that most often in Proverbs, the teaching that's taking place is taking place from parents to a child. Okay, and this is exactly what we would think, right? Because Deuteronomy 6, the Old Testament, in the Old Testament there weren't really schools. Instruction would go from parents to children, and that would be true on the religious level, that would be true on the educational level, that would be true on the skill level in terms of trade. I mean, you know, you didn't like go to college, you know, for a medical degree. Then, I mean, if your dad was a carpenter, you're a carpenter. Congratulations. That's what you get to be. And so you're trained up in these things, and they're teaching these things to their children in the same way that we do with our children. We may not specialize in some form of education here, but I mean, most of we'll be the ones that teach our children to drive, teach our children to catch a baseball, teach them to tie their shoes, and you know, all of those things, the parents to children so that they can receive instruction and they can grow. Verse 3, to receive the instruction of wisdom. Now that is very important. Again, that word instruction comes up, to receive the instruction of wisdom. Here's going to be the bottom line that comes up over and over again as you read the Proverbs. The fool is not willing to listen to advice. The fool is not, like, if the fool, if somebody tells him something, he won't listen to it, or he'll think, I've got this on my own, or he'll think, I can do better without it. I don't need to listen to you. I'm already on the right path. I mean, that's what over and over again, the fool is prideful in that he thinks that he doesn't need the advice of anyone else. Okay, that's exactly what happens with Solomon's son when he refuses to heed the advice of the elders. That is to refuse to receive instruction, to refuse to humble yourself, to admit that you could be wrong. That is what is foolish. What is wise is not, I've got all the answers, I'm really smart. Wisdom in the book of Proverbs is somebody who's willing to humble himself and put himself under authority and receive instruction from that authority, to receive advice, to receive counsel, and to say, you know what, I will consider that, or I will heed that, because I know that is something that is for my good and for my benefit. Those who are not willing to receive instruction in wisdom are those who are foolish. And then verse 3, now here's the interesting part. I told you that there is a moral component to wisdom, and here it comes. Not only to receive instruction in wisdom, but also justice or righteousness, judgment, and equity. Okay, and so wisdom is not just intellectual. Wisdom has a moral, ethical component. It's about righteousness. It's about justice, fairness. It's about judgment, as we're going to see throughout as Solomon's training his son to make right judgments in the courts. And it's about equity. The word there means like straightness. Uprightness would be the term that we would maybe use. I mean, this is just somebody who has integrity. That's what it's talking about. And so there's a moral component to wisdom. Verse 4, to give prudence to the simple. So it's going to tell you who is the audience. He's fighting for the affections and the decisions of the simple. Okay? He's going to tell you he's not really going after the fool or the scoffer, because there are certain fools. There's a certain category of fool who's just unreachable. They're just not going to listen. They're not going to repent. They're not going to humble themselves. But he says the simple, that they're not wise, but they also haven't moved off into foolishness. These are the people I'm going after. And mainly, Proverbs is directed at young people. Okay, he's going to say that here in a second. It's mainly the young man, verse 4. To the young man, knowledge and discretion. So mainly it's really directed to all people, because again, there's this endless cycle that goes on, in that the older are charged with teaching the younger. Okay, now it's true, parents to children, but in the church, what does the Bible say? And the Bible says that the older women are to train the younger women. Okay. Older men are to invest in younger men. It says, Paul tells Timothy, when you're in the church at Ephesus and you're the pastor and you're dealing with older men, you need to respond to them like you would respond to your father. Okay? When you're dealing with peers, you need to respond to them like you would to your brothers. Okay? So there is, the church is a family that's made up of, it should be made up of every generation. Okay, like in our families, you have grandparents, parents, you know, children, grandchildren. In the church, it should be the same way. So if you have a church that's only grandparents or a church that's only children, then there's something that's off there, because you need every generation, where you have the young giving their energy and their excitement to the older, and the older giving their wisdom and their experience to the younger, and each being able as a family to learn and to serve together. Okay, and so he's mainly going after the young, but again, the reason why Proverbs is important, especially to anyone in here, is that you've been given a responsibility within the church to invest yourself in those who are younger than you, so that the pattern will continue after this, so that the young moms in our congregation who have all kinds of questions about how to raise children, how to walk through life, how to handle certain situations, you're able to come alongside them and to offer them godly counsel. And the same is true with older men to younger men, okay? And so he says to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion, okay? Discretion, talking about discernment, talking about decision-making, being able to make wise decisions. That is really strongly what wisdom is about, is decision-making. Being able to... I gave the survey today in our ABF classes, and I'm very interested to see what the results of those surveys are. But one of the questions on there, and I can't remember exactly how I worded it, talking about discerning God's will. And there's a lot of people in life who can just become paralyzed, especially Christians, who can become paralyzed because, and I don't, I probably shouldn't say this because I'm probably stepping on like holy ground here, but I'll just say it anyways. I think, like, I love Blackaby and experiencing God, and I think there's a lot of good things that you can learn out of it. But I think one of the mistakes in what he's written is that, like, people have this idea that the will of God is a dot, that it is one thing. And if you miss that one thing, then your entire life is just thrown off and you're living outside the will of God. I think the Bible teaches that the will of God is more like a circle, in which even in certain circumstances, you can make maybe a couple of different decisions and still be inside the will of God. Because the Bible doesn't, like, when people say that the Bible is the roadmap to life, that's true in one sense. It's also not true in another sense, because it wouldn't be a very good roadmap. And here's why I say that. I know that sounds crazy. Here's why I say that. The Bible doesn't tell you where to go to college. It doesn't. The Bible doesn't tell you what job to have. The Bible doesn't tell you who to marry. Now, the Bible gives you principles about the kind of person that you should marry. The Bible gives you principles about the kind of job that would maybe be appropriate to work. The Bible gives you principles about maybe the appropriate college to go to, but it doesn't say, John, you need to go to boys' college. It doesn't. What does it do? The Bible is a book that gives you a framework and a worldview through a lens through which to view the world so that you can make decisions that are in accordance with, not contrary to, the Bible. Okay, but it doesn't tell you, here's the exact decision that you need to make. John Aiken, you need to marry Ashley. It doesn't say that. It gives you teachings, it gives you principles, it gives you a worldview, and you are responsible before God to make decisions based on the worldview that the Bible gives you, but sometimes decisions that the Bible does not speak specifically to. Okay, does everybody understand that? Anybody have a question about that? Okay, and so it is very difficult to discern in life. This is the one thing that God has you do. Now, there are certain things that the Bible has told you. We talked about this in the morning. Specifically, this is God's will for your life. So, like, you know, if Maddie were to say, I don't want to obey my parents anymore. Well, I don't think it's God's will for me to obey my parents. Well, I mean, you can think that all you want, but God's will is pretty precise. Children, obey your parents. Okay? You know, you can say all kinds of things. I could say, I don't want to work anymore. I just don't want to work anymore. And I think that's God's will for my life. And I can say that all I want to, but the Bible says, no, that a man who doesn't work to provide for his family is worse than an unbeliever. So there are certain things the Bible says, this is the specific will, but what kind of work that you do, the Bible doesn't speak to that, okay? And so what we need is, that's why the book of Proverbs is so key, is because it's going to give us principles, it's going to give us wisdom so that we're able to make decisions so that we're not walking through life paralyzed all the time thinking, am I missing God's will? Am I missing God's will? Did I make the wrong decision there? That when you make decisions that are in accordance with the principles that the Bible teaches, the principles of wisdom in decision making, that you're able to move forward and confidently make decisions, okay? And so he says that this is to give the young man knowledge and discretion, the ability to make decisions. Okay, verse 5, a wise man will hear and increase learning. Again, that idea, he is submitting himself to teaching. He's submitting himself to counsel and to instruction. And a man of, again, verse 5, a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. Okay, so he will seek it out. He will acquire it. He's not going to, when people speak advice into his life, just turn it off. Okay, and here's what Billy Graham has said this before, and I think it's very helpful that, and this idea is going to come up in Proverbs, not just advice, but rebuke. When somebody rebukes you, okay, when somebody says, "Hey, you're doing wrong," Billy Graham, you know, he's taken on a lot of criticism over the years, and he says what he always tries to do is, instead of immediately bristling up when somebody rebukes him or somebody criticizes him, instead of immediately bristling up and just saying, they're an idiot, I'm not going to listen to them because they disagree with me, he says, I ask the question, okay, is there anything in their criticism that is true or that can help me? They may not even have right motives in doing it, but let me ask the question, is there anything in their criticism that can help me? And he says he tries to, if there's anything, even a sliver of what is being said that can help him, he tries to take it and apply it to his life. If there's not, he just, hey, let's just water off the duck's back, and he doesn't pay another second of attention to it. But he says at least he asked that question. He's saying here in Proverbs, counsel, rebuke, you have to be willing to look at those things and ask yourself the question, is this something that I need to know? Is this something that I need to learn? Is this something that will help me walk through life? Okay, in verse 6, to understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. Okay, and so this book is given to help understand wisdom. And then verse 7 is the key verse of the entire book. This is the key verse of the entire book. It's going to come up over and over and over again. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but the fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Our time is running short, so let me just say this, because this will come up over and over again. There's so many things I can say about this phrase, the fear of the Lord. Here's what I'll say. Number one, this teaches us that apart from a relationship with God, you cannot be wise. Okay? Apart from a relationship with God, you cannot be wise. And so there are people all over the planet that people would look at and say, he's smart, he's intelligent, she has a lot of sense, she is, even people would say, wise. But if they don't know Jesus, if they don't have a relationship with God, they cannot be wise. He says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And what that means is, it doesn't mean like just you're scared of, like, I'm scared of God. Like he's out to get you. That's not what fear means. What does fear mean? Fear means, in this context, reverence, awe. Like, you know, our God is an awesome God. He, you know, when we sing that song, because of the 80s, the word awesome has lost any meaning whatsoever. But awesome means like awe-inspiring, that he is holy and perfect. And, you know, Isaiah falling on his face in the temple, I'm undone. I mean, awe-inspiring. God is to be reverenced. We're to have awe in before our great and awesome God. And so fear is awe before the Lord, and fear is dependence upon the Lord. Okay, we're going to see this throughout. Fear is depending upon God because you reverence Him for how awesome He is. And that's what it is. You pay proper respect to Him. You have a proper relationship with Him. And only through that proper relationship, we're going to see in chapter 2 that God alone is the one who can give wisdom. God alone is the one who can give wisdom. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a holy fear. Like, we don't have time to turn to it, but in Hebrews 12, the author of Hebrews is contrasting the Old Testament believers' encounter with God at Sinai and our encounter with Jesus at Mount Zion each week when we gather as the church. And he says, they trembled in fear at Sinai. And then even talking about, you know, in Hebrews, we can come boldly before the throne. But even so, with Jesus and our ability to come right into the presence of God, even in Hebrews 12, he says that coming before Jesus at Zion is going to completely shake the foundations of the earth. And so there's still going to be a gravity. There's going to be a holy fear. There's going to be this when we stand face to face before Jesus, it's going to be there's not going to be flippancy. Okay, there's not going to be it's not going to be a casual kind of thing. It's going to be quite awe-inspiring. So yes, a holy fear is a good way to say that. And that's the beginning of knowledge. And when it says they're the beginning of knowledge, it doesn't just mean like that. That's the starting line. That's the starting blocks. It means when it says the beginning, it means the essence. So like, the fear of the Lord is the beginning, middle, and end. It's the whole piece of what it means to be wise, of what it means to have knowledge. And then the fools despise wisdom and instruction. All right. We will keep moving. That sets up what the book of Proverbs is about. And now he's going to start getting us into the specifics of what wisdom looks like and what folly looks like. And I hope you guys will have fun with the study because I know I will. I really enjoy reading and going through the book of Proverbs. Any questions?